All right, strap in everyone, because today we are diving deep into one of those moments in history that everyone thinks they know, but trust me, there's way more to it than meets the eye.
Oh, I love it when there's more to the story.
Well, get ready, because we are tackling the raid on Lindisfarne in 793 CE.
Lindisfarne, a classic. And listeners sent in a ton of great sources for this one.
Which means we're going way beyond those kind of, you know, typical Vikings just suddenly appeared and wreaked havoc stories. We are going to unpack what really happened.
The why, the who, maybe even the how.
Exactly. And to help me sift through these historical breadcrumbs, I've brought in, you know, someone who can, well, you really know how to make those dense academic papers make sense of them.
Well, I do enjoy a good historical puzzle. And Lindisfarne is a doozy.
It is. Okay, so to kick things off, you know that date everyone throws around?
January 8th.
January 8th, right. You can just forget about it.
Yeah.
Turns out, when you really dig into the sources, like the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, Simeon of Durham, that sort of thing.
Right. Primary sources.
It looks like the actual date was more likely June 8th.
June.
Now, does that strike you as sort of significant?
Well, June, that's prime raiding season, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got the better sailing weather, those long summer days for navigation.
Yeah, so we're maybe not talking about just some you know, random opportunistic attack here.
This has planned operation written all over it.
Yeah, someone knew exactly what they were doing and when to do it. All right, now, speaking of targets, Lindisfarne, we need to be clear here. This wasn't just some, like, you know, little monastery tucked away somewhere.
No, this was the religious heart of Northumbria.
The big leagues.
Absolutely. Burial place of saints, a site of pilgrimage. Think the Vatican of its time, but with even more mystique surrounding figures like St. Cuthbert.
And his relics, those weren't just holy objects. We're talking, you know, powerful symbols. And probably, let's face it, worth a king's ransom.
Oh, absolutely. They would have held immense monetary value as well.
Which makes this next detail from the sources even weirder. Despite accounts of total devastation, you know, like they took everything, those relics, untouched.
Hmm. That's strange. You'd think if it was all about loot, those would be the first to go.
Exactly. Unless
they were hidden.
Shouldn't.
In advance, like maybe the monks had some kind of warning.
Oh, okay. So maybe they knew something was coming and took precautions. All right, hold on though. Because remember, we're mostly getting this story from their side, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Christian monks who wrote the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle or Simeon of Durham.
Right. It's like trying to solve a mystery with only half the pieces.
So what's the other half?
Well, the sources call the attackers heathen men. But what if we try to see things from their perspective? What might they have seen? What drove them to Lindisfarne?
Okay, so let's talk about these heathen men.
Right.
Because, frankly, the sources are kind of vague.
They are.
It's not exactly helpful for our deep dive here.
Well, there are a few hints. Alcuin, he was a scholar and advisor to Charlemagne, mentions a voyage.
So that implies they came by sea.
Right. Planned sea journey. And then we've got Simeon of Durham. He says they came from the north.
The north? But he was writing centuries later.
Yeah, about 300 years after the fact. So maybe he's looking back through a Viking-shaped lens.
So north could be relative, maybe not their actual point of origin.
Precisely. Maybe it was just the direction they approached Lindisfarne from. And things get even more interesting when we look at the Irish Chronicles, like the Annals of Ulster.
Right.
They record raids around the same time, and they also attribute them to heathens.
But wait, didn't they get a lot more specific later on?
They did. You start seeing terms like Finn, Dub, Gaul, Nordman, Dinar.
Like they're learning to distinguish between the different groups.
Exactly. As they encountered them more, they could tell them apart.
Okay, so maybe those early raiding parties were a lot more mixed than we think.
It's possible. A real whodunit with multiple suspects.
Oh, and speaking of suspects, there's this incident in 787.
Oh, yeah.
The Anglo-Saxon Chronicle mentions three ships that landed in Portland. And get this, they call the attackers both Northmen and Danishmen.
Right.
And some sources even say they were from Haretha.
Herethalen.
Where is Herethland?
That is the question, isn't it?
It is.
Some scholars put it in Denmark. Others think it's somewhere else entirely. But here's where it gets really interesting. Some historians think this might not have even been a raid at all.
Wait.
I think it might have been a trade mission.
A trade mission.
Probably.
Gone wrong.
Okay, so now we're talking about groups that were connected, you know, through trade.
Right.
What else might they have shared?
Knowledge, ideas, maybe even grievances, fashion trends.
Okay, speaking of fashion.
Oh, that's a good one. Alcuin actually scolds the Northumbrians for copying pagan hairstyles.
Really?
Yeah. So there's definitely some cultural exchange going on there. Wow. Okay. But we also have evidence of more formal trade.
Absolutely. Those ciatas, those little silver coins from Ribay in Denmark, have been found all over southern England.
Like breadcrumbs.
Leading us back to this pre-Viking trade network.
Okay, so we've got trade connections, but let's not forget we've also got this major religious clash happening.
Mm.
And these Anglo-Saxon monks, they weren't exactly passive observers, were they? They were actively trying to convert the pagans. Sometimes with methods that weren't exactly gentle.
Well, put yourself in their shoes.
Okay.
Imagine your way of life, everything you believe in, and then suddenly you've got these outsiders showing up, determined to change everything. To change everything you hold sacred. Literally.
And, I mean, remember Willibrord, that missionary who desecrated a sacred island. He even slaughtered cattle right in front of the locals.
Yeah, and then there's Boniface. You know, he chopped down the Donar Oak. A major pagan site. Right in front of a crowd.
Not exactly the best way to win hearts and minds.
No. It's like pouring fuel on a fire. You can almost feel that resentment building.
So we're not just talking about different beliefs here. This is a clash of cultures, a clash of worldviews. And to make matters even more complicated, all of this is happening while Charlemagne is expanding his Frankish empire.
Right, with a heavy dose of forced conversions.
Yeah, the Saxon Wars were raging at the same time as the Lindisfarne Raid. And they were brutal.
They were. And Widukind, he was a Saxon leader, he actually fled to Denmark for refuge.
To Denmark?
Yeah. So maybe there's an alliance forming against the Franks and Christianity.
Okay. So we've got religious tensions. We've got political maneuvering. And now enter the famine. The Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, it mentions this great famine happening around this time.
And other sources back that up. The Lorsch Chronicle, for example,
mm-hmm.
It confirms there was a widespread famine in 792, 793.
Okay. And I think we even have climate data suggesting a really harsh winter around that time.
Right. So those famine conditions are very real.
And imagine you're facing starvation. And suddenly those stories about Lindisfarne, you know, the food, the valuables, even those legendary relics.
They become more than just stories. They become a lifeline.
Desperate times, desperate measures.
Perhaps. And if you're already feeling resentful towards those who represent that wealth and power.
Lindisfarne starts to look like a pretty tempting target.
It does make you wonder, was this raid just a coincidence or was it something more?
All right, so we've got this really intriguing setup here, right? We've got tension, we've got politics, we've got famine. But now I want to try to put ourselves on the ground.
At Lindisfarne.
At Lindisfarne. It's June 8th, 793. What did life look like there before everything changed?
Well, picture this, right? So Lindisfarne was an island, but not like a remote, you know, out in the middle of nowhere island.
Yeah.
At low tide, you could actually walk across the sands to the mainland. Yeah.
Yeah.
And right across from Bamburgh, which was a major power center in Northumbria.
Huh. So not exactly hidden. You know, you'd think a place like Lindisfarne, you know, so important religiously, politically, they'd have some serious defenses.
You would think, wouldn't you? But remember, this is a time of shifting alliances. You know, even within Northumbria itself, there were a lot of internal struggles. So maybe their defenses weren't what they should have been.
Or maybe the attackers just knew how to get around them.
Right. Maybe some of that knowledge gleaned from those trade connections we talked about.
Yeah. Okay. So how do you think it went down? You know, do those fearsome longships just appear on the horizon?
You know, it's funny. The sources are completely silent on the types of ships.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We just kind of assume longships, you know, the classic Viking image. But they might have been using something smaller, more maneuverable, something better suited to navigating those shallow coastal waters.
Okay, and the attackers themselves, like, what are they wearing? Are we talking, you know, horned helmets, big, burly, bearded dudes?
That's more Hollywood than history.
Right.
The monks, you know, they weren't really focused on physical descriptions in their accounts. They were much more concerned with the religious aspect, this violation of a holy site, you know, by these heathen men.
Which makes sense, given their worldview, but it still leaves us with a lot of blanks to fill in. So what happens? Were they storm the beaches?
Simeon Durham, he mentions them sort of rushing hither and thither, you know, killing cattle, before they actually attack the monastery itself. So it sounds more like a chaotic raid than like a carefully planned siege.
So more of a smash and grab, get in, get the loot, get out.
Possibly. And remember, we're seeing this through the eyes of the victims here, right? Mm-hmm. Their accounts might be colored by fear, by trauma. We don't actually know how much resistance they put up.
But we do know those relics were untouched, so hidden beforehand, as we suspected.
It seems likely, yeah. And while the sources talk about massacre and devastation,
right,
we have to remember that they were written much later.
Okay.
Possibly with an agenda.
Hmm.
Simeon, for example, was a very devout follower of St. Cuthbert. So portraying the monks as martyrs only enhances the saint's story.
Right? I like that game of telephone. The story just gets a little more dramatic with each retelling.
Exactly.
Wow.
Which is why we have to be careful about taking them at face value.
Yeah.
So, all right, we've got the raid. Valuables are taken. There's violence. But it seems that many of the monks actually survived. What happens next? Do the attackers just vanish?
Well, I'm guessing they didn't stick around for tea and biscuits.
Not quite.
Yeah.
Both Simeon and Alcuin, they mention hostages being taken.
Hostages.
Specifically boys. Alcuin even writes to Charlemagne asking for help getting them back.
Okay, so why take hostages? I mean, were they seen as potential slaves, or was there another reason? Did they maybe have specific skills or knowledge that the attackers needed?
It's a fascinating question. And it makes you wonder, how did the Northumbrians, how did they react to all of this? Were there calls for revenge?
Well, I mean, they weren't exactly a unified force at the time, right? You know, internal struggles, shifting power dynamics. So maybe they weren't really in a position to respond immediately.
And yet the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, it does mention an incident the very next year.
Oh.
At Jarrow, another monastery. And this time the attackers were defeated.
So there was pushback eventually.
Yeah. But Lindisfarne, it definitely left its mark. I mean, you read Alcuin's letters, they're full of anxiety. He sees the raid as a sign of God's wrath, a punishment for the sins of the Northumbrians.
Right, there's that religious lens again, but how might the attackers have seen it? You know, maybe as a victory, a blow against the forces that threaten their own beliefs.
Maybe even a validation of their cause.
So we've got a raid shrouded in mystery, we've got multiple possible motives, and an outcome that really sends ripples through both the Christian and the pagan worlds.
And the question remains, who were these heathen men? Can we connect the dots and finally solve this whodunit?
So we've really gone deep on this one. You know, historical context, the raid itself, but the big question still hangs in the air. Who were those heathen men?
Yeah, the classic mystery. And the traditional answer, of course, is Vikings.
Right, Vikings. But that's a pretty big umbrella, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you've got Norwegians, Danes, Swedes. It's like saying, you know, Europeans committed a crime.
Not very helpful.
No, not really. But remember that detail about them coming from the north.
Right.
If they sailed straight across the North Sea to hit Lindisfarne, well, that narrows things down a bit.
So we're thinking Denmark or Norway.
Most likely, yeah. And those Irish chronicles, they give us another clue. Remember how they start using those more specific terms?
Right. Finn, Dub, all those.
Exactly. So maybe those early raiding parties, they were even more diverse than we imagine.
A real mix of groups, maybe even working together. So we're potentially talking Danes, Norwegians, maybe even some Frisians or Saxons thrown in for good measure.
All with a bone to pick with the Christian world, perhaps.
And think back to those ciatas, those coins we talked about, found all over southern England.
Right.
Those trade routes, they weren't just about goods. They were about information, connections.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So what if that knowledge was also being used for, you know, less than peaceful purposes?
Makes you wonder if some of those traders, you know, maybe they had a side hustle, little raiding on the side.
It's possible. Or maybe they were just passing along information about, you know, potential targets.
Yeah.
Vulnerable spots like Lindisfarne.
Right, right. And then there's the famine. You know, imagine you're facing starvation. Those stories about Lindisfarne, all that wealth, suddenly it's not just a story anymore.
It's a beacon of hope.
Or maybe a target of desperation.
Right. Imagine you're a leader. You're responsible for your people, your community, and they're starving. And you know that a place like Lindisfarne exists, full of food, valuables, even those legendary relics. Wouldn't you at least be tempted?
Especially if you've got, you know, you've got that simmering resentment towards towards those who represent that wealth and power.
Exactly. So this raid, maybe it was a culmination of all those factors. Mm. Religious resentment, the lure of plunder, and just that basic need to survive.
A perfect storm of history. And while we can't, you know, with 100% certainty point the finger at any one group, I think it's pretty clear that the Lindisfarne raid, it wasn't just, you know, some random act of Viking aggression.
Right. It was a symptom of something much bigger, a clash of cultures, a struggle for power, and a fight for survival.
And, you know, a lot of people see this as the start of the Viking Age, but maybe it's more accurate to see it as a turning point.
A turning point.
Yeah. You know, this increasingly complex relationship between Scandinavia and the rest of Europe.
It's a period of intense interaction, trade, conflict, cultural exchange. And Lindisfarne, it's this stark reminder that those interactions weren't always peaceful.
So what's the takeaway here? What's the aha moment?
For me, it's just this reminder that history, it's rarely simple. It's not about good guys and bad guys, you know,
yeah.
Heroes and villains. It's about understanding that the complexities, the multiple perspectives, the things that drive people to make the choices that they do.
It's about challenging those easy narratives.
Yeah.
You know, the ones we think we know, digging a little deeper,
yeah.
Asking questions, and maybe, just maybe, realizing that sometimes those barbarian raids, you know, they were a response to the actions of those that we consider civilized.
It makes you think, doesn't it? Who were the real barbarians in this story? And does it even really matter?
No.
Maybe it's more about understanding those choices, the
yeah.
consequences, and how they shape the world that we live in today.
Well, we hope this deep dive has given you a new perspective on the Lindisfarne raid. It's a story that I think continues to fascinate and challenge us, and reminds us that the past, it's never really past. It's still shaping our present in ways that we might not even realize. So keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.